Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Monday, July 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ghana's opposition reacts to alleged corruption by a government minister.
We in the NDC think that government and its appointees' behavior have led to the collapse of the Ghanaian economy. And this is a typical example of what we have been talking about.
Deadly attacks in Nigeria's Imo state forced several governorship candidates to drop out of the race. A human rights body calls for action in Ethiopia's Oromia region. We'll have an update on the 100 Pillows project in Zambia. An Eswatini government spokesperson discusses dialogue with pro-democracy groups and elections.
His Majesty has duly announced that the national dialogue will take place after the elections, as per the text of our national constitution.
And a friendship karate tournament takes place in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ghana, an official of the opposition National Democratic Congress, the NDC party, says the resignation of a cabinet minister for alleged corruption is proof that President Nana Akufo-Addo's government lacks the commitment to fight graft. Cecilia Abeina Dapa, the Minister for Sanitation and Water Resources, resigned over the weekend for allegedly keeping $1 million and millions in local currency in her house, some of which she said was stolen by employees working there. She said in her letter of resignation that the amount does not represent the exact amount of their personal money that she and her husband reported to the police as stolen. Mustapha Gbandi is the Deputy General Secretary of the opposition NDC. He tells me that Minister Dapa's resignation will not bring relief to those Ghanaians who have lost their jobs or who cannot travel because of high fuel prices.
We in the NDC think that government lacks the commitment to address this issue. We have held that the collapse of the Ghanaian economy is not natural and that government and its appointees' behavior have led to the collapse of the Ghanaian economy. And this is a typical example of what we have been talking about. And that they are keeping huge sums of this money in their homes. How can an appointee keep up to a tune of $1 million hard currency in her home in the midst of a collapsed economy? And so we think that the president doesn't have a commitment in dealing with corruption. And so her resignation is nothing. It doesn't heal the economy. It is just a matter that has exposed what we have always held about this government and its appointees. They are keeping huge sums of money in their homes belonging to the state. And that if everyone decides to keep money in their bank, what will become of the Ghanaian economy itself? What will become of our credit strength? Would have destroyed the economy. And so when we have a policy that people should transact businesses through banks, you have government appointees keeping money in their houses. And that is bizarre.
I think the minister is honorable because I think she did the right thing by resigning and she wants an investigation. And she has denied that she did anything wrong.
She's not in a position to decide whether she's done something right or wrong. It is in the discretion of the public to determine whether she's wrong or right. And so for me, I believe that we must begin to understand that the collapse of the economy is not a natural situation. It is very artificial. It is not because there was COVID or there was a Ukraine war. It's because the president and his appointees are engaged in such activities that undermine the credibility and strength of our economy. And so her resignation is nothing to write home about.
Is it fair to want to blame the government for her action?
The president himself eats corruption and drinks corruption. No president has been so corrupt in this country like His Excellency Nana Akufo-Addo is.
You say the president himself is corrupt. Do you have any evidence to prove that?
Appointing families and friends when you have promised not to do same in itself a corrupt practice. Chartering a private jet in the name of baffling in the sky is in itself corruption.
The Ghanaian people, what is their reaction?
The Ghanaian people are not waiting. They are not ready for a coup, as all of us believe. But of course, the Ghanaian people are patiently praying for 2024 so that they could vote and vote out these gangs out of governance.
Mustapha Gbandi is the Deputy General Secretary of Ghana's main opposition National Democratic Congress. He was speaking with me from Ghana's capital, Accra. Deadly attacks by unknown gunmen that killed several traditional chiefs, security personnel, and residents in the oil-rich Nigeria's eastern state of Imo have forced several candidates to drop out of a governorship election that's scheduled for November. This as military authorities vowed to intensify efforts to raid the region of militants and kidnappers. One candidate that is staying in the race is Dr. Kachi Mwoga of the Opposition Action Democratic Party and a member of the American Public Health Association. He tells VOA's Chinedu Ofoon that despite the risks, the ideals of democracy are worth fighting for.
It is really true that not only are people so afraid that they are not coming out to vie, they're even afraid to come to support the candidates of their choice. And people are even saying they'd be too afraid to even vote on that day. It's a sad situation. It's a very discouraging situation. It's a situation of hopelessness and helplessness. This is why I'm in the race precisely. I'm in the race to ask people not to give up. I'm in the race to ask people that something can be done. I'm here to help to wake up the spirit of the Imo person.
Dr. Mwoga, you are a member of the U.S. Public Health Association. You are also experienced in medicine in Nigeria. Ordinarily, people say you are successful and you do not need to go through this possibly danger of either attack or the dirty, quote-unquote, nature of politics. So why are you going into it?
Consider this. We are all sitting in a plane and some guy who doesn't know his onions is the pilot in the cockpit, holding a knife and a gun, and says, anybody who comes near here, I'll kill him. But this guy is driving this plane, and you can see clearly that this plane is going to crash. What do you do? Sit on your seat and buckle your seatbelt and wait for a crash? Or take your chances to go in knowing that you can actually pilot this craft out of this danger? Second is that, yes, you've captured my life as a doctor. You probably also need to capture the fact that I am a technology consultant. I have consulted for several states. I have consulted for federal agencies. I have consulted for the World Bank. And in the course of all of these, I have been able to deliver solutions to states in so many areas that can benefit my state and pull her out of this kind of situation we find ourselves.
The current governor of Imo State, Senator Hope Uzodinma, says he's done a lot, improving infrastructure, doing roads, taking care of human capacity, and also lifting the state in terms of education. What do you think of these achievements that the governor hopes will get him back to the government house for a second term?
Since the governor is confident about his achievements, then he needs not stifle the opposition. He should please ask his people, his agencies, to please let the opposition breathe. Let us be able to campaign.
That was Dr. Kachi Mwoga, a member of the American Public Health Association, representing the Opposition Action Democratic Party in upcoming elections in Nigeria's Imo State. He was speaking with VOA's Chinedu Ofoon from Abuja. The Ethiopian Human Rights Commission has called for urgent attention to security problems and conflict in the country's Oromia region. Authorities have blamed attacks by the rebel Oromo Liberation Army, but the Rights Commission says local authorities are also committing rights violations and displacing people. Maya Misika reports from Addis Ababa.
In its annual report this month, the state-appointed Ethiopian Human Rights Commission urged officials to pay closer attention to the tensions and violence in the Oromia region. The commission said there have been attacks in 13 of the 20 zones in the Oromia region, leading to an alarming level of casualties and an extremely concerning overall situation. The Ethiopian government blames a rebel group, the Oromo Liberation Army, for the violence. But the commission said the response of government forces has also resulted in rights abuses. Deputy Commissioner Rakib Malesa says the Rights Commission is emphasizing the need for peaceful negotiations.
The retaliation measures taken by government equally incurs human rights violations because civilians are affected, people are displaced because of the retaliated measures.
Attempts to call and text a spokesperson for the Oromia region went unanswered. Fighting between the federal government and the OLA has caused thousands of deaths and displaced millions in the region over the past 4 years. A former resident and teacher in the Horo Gudru Alega zone, who wanted to remain anonymous, says school has been disrupted for the past 2 years where he used to live. I have taught for a long time there, for 26 years. But because of the security problems there, I left. I am now in Addis Ababa. Even the way we left was in special circumstances. We walked 90 kilometers on foot.
those of us who were able to leave. The resident says that the attacks are being carried out by militias known as Fano from the neighboring Amhara region. We know very well that it's the armed fighters Fano. They're the ones stealing, killing, and displacing people. Everyone knows this, including government bodies. They are creating major problems. In April, federal government orders to integrate Amhara special forces, including Fano, into the federal military or the police triggered widespread protests. More recently, Amhara and Oromo militias have been targeting each other's neighborhoods, one example of Ethiopia's long-simmering ethnic conflicts. Emmanuel Adino, executive director at the Center for Development and Capacity Building, which works in Oromia, says the conflicts have created mistrust in the community. The state of anarchy created around these areas of conflict is behind increasing levels of cruelty. It has eroded the trust that people had in one another. He says many social institutions aimed at helping people in need are no longer functional. Peace talks between the Ethiopian government and the OLA took place in April, but ended without any agreements. Maya Msikir for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I am James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, July 24th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. VOA's English to Africa service celebrates its 60th anniversary on August 4th. Help us celebrate by sharing your thoughts on our programs. Send a voice message or a text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076. Once again, +1 202 258 3076. Tell us what your favorite program is, or let us know about a particular news story that you connected with. Recall a favorite memory about VOA Africa, and tell us what stories you think we should cover or how we can improve. Once again, the WhatsApp number is +1 202 258 3076, +1 202 258 3076, and we thank you for 60 years of support. A spokesperson for the government of Eswatini says former South African President Thabo Mbeki's visit to the country last week had nothing to do with facilitating dialogue between the government in Mbabane and pro-democracy groups. There was speculation that former President Mbeki was coming with a message from the African National Congress that it is interested in encouraging dialogue to bring about democracy in the small southern African country. Eswatini government spokesperson Alpheus Zumalo tells me that King Mswati III, Africa's last absolute monarch, has announced that the national dialogue will take place after the September 2023 parliamentary elections. However, analysts say polls in Eswatini are not democratic because candidates associated with political parties are not allowed to participate.
Former President Thabo Mbeki considers the Kingdom of Eswatini as a second home because this is where he spent most of his exile life during the liberation struggle of the Republic of South Africa. So it is a norm and a practice that each time he has come to the kingdom for one engagement or the other, he will always make sure that he pays a courtesy call to His Majesty the King.
Well, there were expectations that perhaps former President Mbeki was coming there with a message from the sub-region pertaining to political dialogue in your country.
That is absolute nonsense. There's nothing like that. President Mbeki responded to an invitation that was extended to him personally and his foundation by the World University School Waterford, Damhlaba, in Mbabane. So he was not here on any formal government business, neither was he here for any business from SADC and so on and so forth.
So bring us up to date. Where are we in terms of dialogue between your government and pro-democracy groups?
Emaswati don't negotiate with any group or pro-democracy group. Emaswati dialogue amongst themselves. His Majesty have duly announced that the national dialogue will take place after the elections as per the dictates of our national constitution. And that will take place immediately after the national elections. And obviously, the logic is very obvious and clear there. You have a new government in place, government that will be given a new agenda by Maswati as they deliberate and make submissions and dialogue amongst themselves during Sibaya before a formal government is ushered in.
Well, talking about the national elections, how democratic do you think the elections are going to be? Because there's been criticism in terms of how democratic the elections are.
There is absolutely no credibility in that criticism that people are labeling from time to time about the elections. You see, these elections are very open, they are very democratic. You would not have had a serious people who are calling or identifying themselves with strong political formations. And nobody from any of the corners of society of this country has ever lodged a complaint that he has been prejudiced on the basis of him or her belonging to a political formation.
Alpheus Zumalo is the Eswatini government representative. He was speaking with me from the capital, Mbabane. Last month, we brought you the story of Beauty Katebe of Zambia and her project to buy 100 pillows for the University Teaching Hospital in the capital, Lusaka. Katebe has been working with the facility for 2 years as head of the Human Resource Department. She plans to retire effective October 23rd this year, and as part of her retirement idea, she wants to purchase and donate as many pillows as she can afford to the hospital. She told us last month that the cost of one Rexing cover pillow is 150 Zambian kwacha, or US $8. Now, Katebe tells me that the response has been overwhelming, as she has so far raised 219 pillows and pledges continue to come in.
The project is going on very, very well. The response has been so, so overwhelming. So far from the date, we have 291 pillows and people are still paying and people are still pledging. One thing that is so interesting and so fascinating is that we have pillows coming all the way from South Africa, from Norway, and from the United States of America.
In terms of your expectation when you started the project, is this what you were expecting?
Fortunately, no, because like I said, initially I just meant to give about 100 pillows, but then when I extended to my colleague, I didn't still expect to receive such an overwhelming response. When I look at what I have collected so far and how many people have remained with the pledges, I'm telling myself we may end up giving the entire full bed capacity of the hospital. I keep my fingers crossed the way things are going, we may manage to reach that.
So what are you going to do with all those pillows?
For the initial pillows that we have managed to mobilize, I'm intending to give them to this one hospital because it's the biggest hospital. Everyone that is coming from all other districts, all other provinces referred to the University Teaching Hospital. So it will cater for everyone. But then the way the response has been, already I have people that have contacted me to see if we can mobilize pillows in other provinces, other districts. So it looks like, I feel, it may become a countrywide crusade because it's not a problem for the University Teaching Hospital alone.
When we spoke just a few days ago, you mentioned also there was another effect to this project when other people are contacting you to help them with what? Pillows?
I think some people felt like I had resources reserved to assist people out there. So they contacted me asking for help from me, but I explained to them that I actually do not have any resources reserved for helping people, not necessarily that I had money.
Beauty Katebe is a Zambian gender activist and soon to retire head of the Human Resource Department at the University Teaching Hospital in Lusaka, Zambia. She was speaking with us from the capital. Gold mine, the capital of North Kivu province in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, hosted the third edition of the African Great Lakes Region Karate Competition. The so-called Friendship Tournament included athletes from six countries in the sub-region, and the organizers wanted it to focus primarily on the theme of peace between neighboring countries. From Gold mine, reporter Zaneb Zaidi has this story.
The regional karate competition took place in a friendly atmosphere. Athletes from seven African countries, including Tanzania, Uganda, Congo Brazzaville, Angola, Burundi, Cameroon, and the Democratic Republic of Congo, demonstrated their performance in this discipline over 4 days in front of a diverse audience of several nationalities. Cameroon won the tournament, taking home 43 medals, including 30 golds, 12 silvers, and 1 bronze. The DRC was a close second with 36 medals, including 11 golds, 18 silvers, and 7 bronzes. For VOA Africa, I'm Zanim Netizaili in Goma.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the draws for the 2023-2024 season of the CAF Champions League and the CAF Confederations Cup preliminary stages, which will be conducted on Tuesday at the CAF headquarters. 54 clubs from 42 member associations will be participating in this season's CAF Champions League, while 52 clubs will be representing 41 member associations and will be competing in the CAF Confederations Cup. CAF interclub competitions, including the CAF Women's Champions League, have shown tremendous growth over the last few seasons, thanks to CAF's increased investment in broadcast technology and global marketing engagement across its competitions. Africa's representatives at the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup are yet to record any win, as South Africa's Bayana Bayana conceded a 90th-minute goal to lose 2-1 to world number 3, Sweden, in their opening Women's World Cup Group G clash at a wet Wellington in New Zealand on Sunday. Bayana took the early lead in the second half through striker Hilda Magaya and looked on course for at least a historic first point at the finals, but conceded twice in the final 25 minutes to slip to a defeat that would be hard to take. Bayana coach Desri Ellis says there are many positives to take out of their heartbreaking 2-1 loss to Sweden.
We were really good defensively. We've worked a lot on our defense. We've worked a lot on our set pieces, and I thought we handled those two areas really well. We worked a lot on our transition as well, and, you know, protecting the ball, and I think we could have protected the ball maybe a little bit more on occasions, and or even spread it a little bit more when we had the opportunity. Transitions, the final ball in the final third, if that was better, we're talking about different result now.
In basketball news, Guinea made history on Sunday by becoming the new winners of the FIBA Under-16 African Championship. It is the first time since 2013 that a team not called Egypt or Mali wins the basketball championship. Angola, who won the tournament a decade ago, finished fourth this time around, with Guinea winning the FIBA Under-16 African Championships in their first appearance in the final. The 84-76 win was Guinea's second victory over Egypt in this year's tournament. It followed an 83-78 victory in the group phase. In athletics, Kenya's Jacqueline Chepkoech produced a brilliant personal best of 8 minutes 57.35 seconds as she won the 3,000-meter steeplechase at the London Diamond League on Sunday. That display made her the only athlete to go under 9 minutes this year and left the world 3,000-meter steeplechase record holder Beatrice Chepkoech to settle for second place in a season best of 9 minutes 4.34 seconds. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, July 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Butte in Washington, wishing that you will...